I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. Our guest this hour wrote a piece in the New York Times appearing on February 3rd, Protect Our Children's Brains. And it is about the pesticide chlorpyrifos. It's a widely used pesticide, and it affects humans as well as the bugs that it kills. Our guest did research on an article that had the working title of The Last Days of Chlorpyrifos. But as a result of a new administration, the outcome of that drug is a bit more uncertain. We'll learn about what the drug is used for, how it has been studied, what scientists say it can cause, the harmful effects of this, and also we'll take a broader look at what's happening with an easing of regulations and what's happening with the Environmental Protection Agency. Our guest this hour is Sharon Lerner, and she's a reporter at The Intercept. Her recent work focuses on chemicals, health, and the environment. She's also written for The Washington Post, The New York Times. She's been a contributing reporter at The American Prospect and The Nation, and also worked as a public radio producer and taught journalism. She's won many awards for her work, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for Sharon during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, love to read your comments there, is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Sharon, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure, Sharon. Why don't we start with what this is? I have never heard of this, chlorpyrifos, but it's widely used. What is it, and what is it used for?
Yeah, it's a pesticide. So it is used on about 50 crops. It's registered on about 50 crops right now in the United States, and it's used around the world in more than 100 countries, so very widely used. There are about 6 million pounds of chlorpyrifos used on crops each year. And it was first brought onto the market by Dow in 1965. So it's been around quite a long time, more than 50 years now. And it was, we've been aware that there are dangers of this pesticide since the beginning, really. It was actually first developed, oddly, in a Nazi laboratory back in around the time of the Second World War.
Really?
Yeah, and it's an organophosphate, which is a group of chemicals, some of which went on to be developed by those Nazi chemists as nerve agents, chemical weapons. Sarin is an organophosphate, for instance. There are many other organophosphates that went on to become pesticides, and for much the same, they sort of affect bugs and all sorts of creatures by interfering with the nervous system. So that's how they kill the pests that they target. Unfortunately, they also seem to interfere with various aspects of the human nervous system. And that's something that we knew pretty much from the beginning of their use, that people who were exposed to much of them were poisoned, which isn't that surprising. You know, it's a pesticide. We know these things are dangerous. So back in 2000, though, because there are so many poisoning incidents, the EPA actually essentially banned its use in homes. It had been very widely used to kill cockroaches and termites and that kind of thing, and was in products like Raid. But there are so many people who were getting too much of it that, as I said, the EPA decided that that was no longer safe. And so it stopped the use of chlorpyrifos in homes in 2000. At the same time, though, they did decide to let it remain in use on crops, in agriculture. And what my story is about is over the past 16, 17 years now, there's been mounting evidence not showing that the chlorpyrifos doesn't just have these sort of immediate poisoning effects, but it has these long-term, subtler effects on kids' brains if they're exposed.
Mm-hmm. And what are those effects?
So there has been a lot of research tying very, very small levels of exposure when kids are even in utero. So if mothers are exposed to it, then their fetuses get some of it through their blood. The higher, more highly exposed kids have higher rates of ADHD, autism. So there is some tremors sometimes associated with a cognitive, like sort of learning problems. There's a deficit in memory and in IQ. So all sorts of things. But basically, the development of the human brain, very delicate, very rapid, you know, when there's, you know, developing inside the uterus, or even when they're very, very young, babies and toddlers and whatnot, those are the years when if, you know, exposure to chlorpyrifos can have these kinds of, at least when they've measured, you know, these kinds of effects.
Mm-hmm. And if in 2000 the EPA banned the use in homes, if they realized it was that dangerous, why wouldn't they just totally ban the use?
Right. Good question. And there was a push to do that at that time. A couple of environmental organizations had asked the EPA to do that. In my reporting, and if you, I don't know if you guys put the link to the Times piece, but in the Times piece, there's a link to another piece that I wrote, because basically I kind of wrote the Times piece based on a much longer investigative piece I did for The Intercept. And in that piece, I explained that I got in touch with a retired toxicologist who worked for the EPA on chlorpyrifos, and he was describing to me a sort of deal that the agency made with Dow, in which Dow said, you know what, if you try to remove chlorpyrifos from agricultural use, at this point you're gonna have a lawsuit on your hands. And they didn't actually file a lawsuit, but ultimately it seems that the agency decided not to have to deal with an expensive and labor-intensive lawsuit, and instead, you know, they went for removing it from home use, which was not opposed and didn't trigger a lawsuit, and leaving it on the market.
I see. But over the past 15 years, there have been a number of scientific studies, a number of them showing that this is harmful, the use on crops is harmful to human beings. It seems to me that's a long time before you would take action on potential serious harms that could come.
Yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, I guess there are about around two dozen studies that show various impacts. You know, it's a very complicated, scientifically a complicated thing to show. And so, you know, some of the studies looked at blood metabolites, some looked at urine metabolites, and the agency, when they make policy, they're really careful. You know, it took them, they were spent years looking at this. So, yeah, you would think they would act more quickly, but it's a bureaucratic agency, and it's very complicated science.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, I have spoken to people, obviously, within the agency who worked on it, and they told me, you know, partly what they were doing was addressing legal questions, or scientific questions that were posed by, you know, members, representatives of the industry that were affected, which is a reasonable thing to do. But ultimately what happened, it took years, and really the final, you know, we're going to do this and we have answered all the questions, came on November 10th of 2016, which was, as you may remember, 2 days after the election.
Right.
So it's just, you know, and this was after many delays, and I think what was sort of heartbreaking to me about this was that I really did begin my story thinking that I was going to be documenting the exit, you know, the sort of the last days of chlorpyrifos, which is how I was thinking about it. That basically, after years and years and years, this pesticide was finally going down. And, you know, and then, it had been delayed many times. If it hadn't been delayed the last time, this would have been a done deal, and we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Interesting. So you write in the piece, the federal court ruled that the EPA must submit its rule on this by the end of March. But considering there's a radically new administration and the EPA could be cut. I don't know how significantly it's been cut by now, and you've got EPA people demonstrating in Chicago on Monday of this week. What is it clear to you what the new administration will do about this? Will they rule on the basis of what was discovered in the final report in November? What will happen?
You know, I don't think it's clear to anybody, and I think that, and that's really why I wrote the piece in the Times, is to say, you know, first of all, I think we can see that there is so much happening in the administration, back and forth, and, you know, a lot of chaos and a lot of different fronts, and a lot of situations where public pressure has really changed the outcome. And I think on this issue in particular, this is, you know, what I feel very clear about, having spent months looking at this, is that the scientific questions about this are resolved. And the folks I spoke to, very careful scientific, you know, folks who've been working on this for years, say the science is resolved. So I just thought, you know, let's take a moment. We're so divided right now as a country, right? But maybe we can come together on the idea that we don't want to harm kids' brains. You know,
right.
Like it just seems like if we all really understand what the issues are here, then I can't imagine why anyone would move forward with it. On the other hand, and that is the optimist in me, and I am an optimist. On the other hand, there's a lot of reason to suspect that it won't go that way. And some of those are, obviously, the president has said a lot about opposing regulations, and he's, you know, the two for one, if you cut one, you have to replace it with two. So he's very clearly not inclined to restrict industry in any way. And this would be a change, a big change, because, as I said, so much of it is in use. And also, Donald Trump has very clear ties to not just industry in general, but Dow in particular. He named Andrew Liveris, who is Dow's CEO, to his manufacturing council to chair it. And on the very first weekday he was in office, his first thing was to meet with Andrew Liveris, and Dow contributed $1 million to his inaugural fund. So, you know, there are a lot of ties and a lot of reasons to think maybe this won't happen. But I think it can, and I think part of what has to happen for it to just get finalized is for people to appreciate the what's at stake and make some noise about it, you know. And I can't imagine, you know, there are so many issues that this administration is coming up to speed on, and this is one that I hope they'll, you know, take some time to look at and realize would be a big mistake for kids and parents of kids. I mean, I think regardless of their political affiliation, parents everywhere are going to think it's a good idea to protect children's brains.
We welcome phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And our guest is Sharon Lerner, a reporter at The Intercept, who had a piece in the New York Times on February 3rd, Protect Our Children's Brains. The article that she was working on, because she's done a lot of research on this, was to be the last days of chlorpyrifos, a widely used pesticide. But considering the change in administration, it's rather unclear what direction the administration will go on banning the use of this, or if there are too many ties between the parent company and the Trump administration to keep them from banning this, and also just the whole administration's views on regulations, which they feel are excessive. This is what the president had to say. Sharon was just talking about regulations. Here's what the president had to say about regulations.
We're reducing unnecessary regulations. And we want regulations, but we want real regulations that mean something. I am, to a large extent, an environmentalist. I believe in it. But it's out of control.
Let's go to phone calls, and our number, 800-486-8655. Ben in Madison, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call today. Now, I'm definitely a big proponent and advocate for organic farming, and so this is definitely a topic of great interest to me. And I guess I'm just calling because I just wanted a little bit of clarification. I know the guest is mentioning or talking about exposure to the chemical, and I was just curious if we're talking, you know, exposure from the chemical itself actually drifting in the air and kind of breathing it in, or are we talking exposure from ingesting produce that the chemical has been applied to?
Thank you. That's a great question, Ben. So we're really talking about both. So in agricultural communities, kids are at especially high risk. As you said, that's partly from drift, what is in the air. It's also partly possibly from drinking water, because in many parts of the country there is some chlorpyrifos in drinking water in agricultural communities. But there is also sometimes residue on fruit, and for this reason, all of the researchers I spoke to said that they urge women, especially women of childbearing age, and children to eat organic, which is what you were talking about. I think there is still more work to be done in terms of figuring out the levels of exposure through fruits and vegetables, but it is clear that sometimes there is residue on, and that's one way it gets into the human body.
Can you wash it off, do you know?
I think that actually the EPA report that was talking about residues is actually on peeled fruit. So I assume that if you can wash it off, some of it off, you can't wash all of it off, but I don't actually know the details of that.
Mm-hmm. I also read somewhere, tell me if this is true or not, Sharon, that this pesticide is also used on lawns, and
yes.
Also, it is used.
Golf courses. Well, it's used in golf courses, road medians, and actually, oddly, a very small percentage. I think it's less than 1%, but it's actually used sometimes to kill mosquitoes for public health reasons.
Oh. Do you have any idea where the nominee for the head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, stands on this issue? Has he been asked about it?
I don't believe he has been directly asked about it, but my hunch, I mean, I have yet to see an instance in which he has stood up stood up for a public protection that in any way would negatively affect the company. I really have yet to see that, so I would be surprised, honestly, if he would stand up for this on his own. That's really my personal opinion, because I haven't seen him on the record about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but it is very clear, I should say, that, you know, Dow very clearly opposes this and says it's unnecessary and challenges the science. And, you know, they've hired a science for hire firm that you know, puts out, they analyze the issue and always come up with seeing it a different way. But if you look at independent science on this question, the vast majority finds that there are negative consequences for kids' brains.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment, and here's how you reach our conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about a very interesting article in the New York Times last Sunday about chlorpyrifos, a widely used pesticide. Our guest has been doing research on this pesticide and was close to writing an article, because there has been a banning of this for indoor use many years ago, but it looked as though there were so many reports that this was going to be in November. It looked as though this was going to be banned from use on crops and use on lawns as well. Now with the new administration and their thoughts about regulations and also their ties to Dow, which is the largest maker of this pesticide, there is some concern about what will happen, to say nothing of the fact that the EPA is kind of in chaos right now as well. There's a nominee for the director of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, who has not yet even been confirmed, but there were protests Monday in Chicago against the impending confirmation of the Oklahoma Attorney General, protest by federal workers against the Trump administration. 300 people, a third of whom worked for the agency, were on the streets outside their regional office of the EPA, and Those people included scientists, people who work for the EPA who are concerned about the direction the agency will go. Will the agency, because of the new direction, keep this banning of this pesticide from even happening? Well, what do you think? 800-486-8655, the number. More of your calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Our phone number this hour, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Sharon Lerner is our guest, reporter at The Intercept, and her work has centered on chemicals, on health, and on the environment. She's written for The Washington Post, for The New York Times, and many other publications. And we go next to Peg in Antigo. Hi, Peg.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I don't have a question. I just have a comment. Programs like this are so valuable, and no matter how much money you have to have clean air, clean water, and protection from these horrible pesticides. And why people don't understand, they can't buy these things. So we have to protect them. And brain damage can't be reversed. So I have great-grandchildren now, and I want not only them, but I want all children protected. And I think your program is right on. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Peg, for the call. And you certainly make that case at the end of the article. It should not be a partisan issue, Sharon.
I completely agree with Peg. We should not be... We should not be questioning whether anyone can have access to clean air, clean water, or, you know, or not having pesticides in their blood. Yeah.
So why is it a partisan issue?
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of these very basic environmental issues have, in fact, become partisan, and it is quite heartbreaking, you know, and this is what we... We're very much engaged in this debate right now. I was watching the House hearing yesterday, the House Science Committee hearing on the EPA, and really the ability to use science is by the agency is really under attack, and it's really serious.
And I mentioned the protest that took place. I would imagine there will be more of this. A lot of people who are working for the EPA are saying that people who are there, many of them are feeling, to use the union rep's quote, beleaguered.
Yes. And there was just a letter, I don't know if you saw it, by 447 former EPA staffers urging the Senate not to confirm Pruitt because they feel that, you know, he does not have the, you know, he doesn't value the mission of the agency.
Does it? It looks like most of the nominations are going through. Probably the biggest protest was for DeVos. But if indeed he is confirmed, is there enough discontent among scientists, people who work for the EPA, Americans, that not all of these loosening of regulations will be able to proceed?
Well, I mean, I think that we saw that before. We've seen that they have gone too far in the past, and there people have looked back on a former administrator named Gorsuch who, you know, went too far and was
right.
Replaced. But, you know, I think that we don't, I know that it's true, a lot of these things are going through, and even DeVos, who is very strongly opposed, you know, was just confirmed yesterday. I do know that, you know, that there was a lawsuit filed against him yesterday by the ACLU because he has refused to release communications, his emails, that he had many emails with various energy, coal, oil companies that he did not release to the public. So that's one snafu that he's going to have to contend with. I mean, I don't think it's over yet, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think that given the level of alarm among people from both parties or people who have worked at the administration, the EPA, who, you know, from all sorts of whatever their political leanings, I think that there is an overwhelming opposition to the idea of him leading the agency. So I don't think it's over.
Let's go to Benjamin in Green Bay next. Hi, Benjamin.
Oh, hi. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just going to comment. I do a lot of reading. I'm a retired research engineer from Green Bay. And there's a stretch of area in a book I was reading. I belong to the library club in De Pere. And the book I was reading has a stretch from south of De Pere all the way to the Chilton area in between Lake Winnebago and Lake Michigan that has the highest rate of cancer in about six or seven states.
Mm.
And we had an issue with one of our granddaughters who had, we don't have cancer in our family, but she had cancer at 1 year old, one year old. And so it's, the water is very, very, very important to have it tested earlier because the results of a test of water to make sure it's drinkable or usable for anything at all, as opposed to the end results in cancer situation, is very, very cheap.
Yeah. What about the link between, this has been talked about for so much, where is science on this, the possible link between the use of pesticides and the emergence of, I know it was studied for the increase in the number of people with breast cancer.
Well, there's so many different pesticides, so many different, and they have a real range of health impact, you know. So with chlorpyrifos, cancer is not the main concern. With others, it is. I know that there have been a lot of questions about whether glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, is linked to cancer, and IARC, which is an international part of the World Health Organization, has decided that it does or it does not, so that they, you know, list it as a possible carcinogen. So, you know, I think it really depends on the chemical, and there are so many.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655. You've been looking through a number of studies. I'm wondering what scientists who have been working on this have been saying to you, Sharon, about the future, about the banning, about whether what they think, all of that work that they've done.
Well, I honestly, you know, I talked to most of them. I was in contact with them mostly before the election. And I think the assumption was that, you know, this was, you know, a rare sort of happy moment here where finally this was going to happen. The ones that I have spoken to since the election mostly feel, I think, despondent about it because, you know, there's a very good chance that all this work will, you know, I don't know that it'll be reversed permanently, but it certainly could be stalled for quite some time. And I think that there's a feeling that you know, that of not being heard, I think. I mean, another interesting voice in this, you know, some of the folks I spoke to for the longer article were parents of children who were in some of the studies. So one of the studies I looked at, which was called the CHARGE study in California, it looks at cases of autism, and then sort of it uses, they have two really good databases in California, one that looks at autism cases, one that looks at the use of pesticides. And by combining the two, they were able to see that the women who lived in a sort of close to where the spraying happened during their pregnancies were more likely to give birth to autistic kids for certain pesticides. Definitely for chlorpyrifos, women who were in their second trimester and lived near a spraying had more than triple the rates of having autistic kids. Did that make sense?
Yeah, that made sense.
Well, so I went and met some of the kids and parents in this study, and one of them really just, her name is Jennifer Coleman, and talking to her really kind of broke my heart because, again, I spoke to her mostly before the election, and then after the election I called her back and I explained that, you know, there is really a question now as to whether this would happen. You know, not that it wouldn't necessarily, but, you know, there's basically a wrench thrown into the works. And she just was puzzled, you know. And for her, it was, you know, she doesn't consider herself a political person at all, but she was like, you know, why would anybody, why, you know? And, you know, she said she had participated in the research because, just really because she wanted to help other people, because she felt like, look, we already, both her kids are autistic. She lives in a farming community, and she has two sons, both who have autism. And she said, you know, we already have it, so participating in this study isn't going to help me. We did it because we just thought it would help other people, you know, spare other people some of the pain we've had. And how could they not listen to that? And mm-hmm. I thought, like, wow, that is, you know, she seemed really heartbroken by that, and I really didn't know what to say to her.
Have other countries, you say it's being used all over the world, are there other countries that have done significant scientific studies and have banned chlorpyrifos?
Not that I know of yet.
Thanks very much, Benjamin, for your call. We go to Jeff in Medford next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a comment because I'm a small grower that grows without herbicides or pesticides. I use as much natural organic compost as I can, and I think it's very important for both the human health and the health of bees, which I just started raising this year, that we ban or limit or somehow restrict the usage of all these chemicals. But I wanted to go back to an earlier comment by one of your guests, and that the bipartisanship. And I want to say this is truly a bipartisan question or issue, because a lot of people that I know that are conservative and liberal both want this to happen, and they get together on it. So I just wanted to emphasize that this is truly not one or the other. It is truly a bipartisan issue. Thank you.
Can I respond to that and just say I agree, and I'm cheered to hear that. And if he could, you know, I think that the world needs to hear from the political conservatives and the Republicans who think this is a good idea. That's who we need to hear from.
Thank you. And I think there's a lot of us out there that are doing that in our own circles. I mm-hmm. think what the news gets broadcast more is the one side, not the support from, like, what we're just talking about.
Yep. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much. You say in your article that Dow agroscientists, who are the largest producers of this pesticide in the U.S., they strongly disagree with the EPA's proposal to revoke the tolerances, which it described as based on flawed research. I want you to respond to that.
Yes.
And also, authorized uses of chlorpyrifos products offer wide margins on protection for human health and safety when used as directed. What do you make of that?
Okay, so first, the flawed research. You know, what they are mostly focusing on there is a study done by a woman at the Columbia School of Public Health, I believe. She's definitely a Columbian. Her name is Virginia Rao. And she did a big epidemiological study, which provides probably the best evidence of the neurotoxic dangers of chlorpyrifos. What she did, she was enrolling kids, actually pregnant women, in a study in the 1990s to look at various chemicals, I think, among them chlorpyrifos. And in the process of enrolling these mothers, the ban that I talked about earlier, the ban on home use, went into effect.
Mm-hmm.
So what ended up happening is she had the same one population of, you know, women in New York City, pregnant women in New York City. And then in the middle of enrolling, it went from these were people who were exposed to chlorpyrifos in the home to these who were people who were not exposed to chlorpyrifos in the home. So what that ended up doing was dividing the population into her study group, and she was able to compare the highly exposed women and their kids with the most women who had much less exposure and their kids. Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense.
Okay. And that was, and in doing that, she saw, one, that there were real differences. So there was, you know, in the very earliest when she looked at them, there was a difference in head size. and she looked at them again when they were 3 years old, and she was measuring the level of an analyte of the chemical in the cord blood of these babies. And then she went on to see at three, they had ADHD and their levels of, you know, how they did on various tests were significantly different from those in the two groups, right? And then she continued to study them. She looked at seven and at 11, and she found lasting impacts. So she found that, you know, that they were more likely to have, like, motor skill deficits, like how they... it's really interesting. If you click through to the larger article, I reprinted this image that she has in one of her studies of spirals that were drawn by the kids who were highly exposed, and compared to those who were drawn by the kids who were less exposed. And you can see the shakiness of their hands. Anyway, so she documented. She even imaged their brains and showed that the brains were structurally different. So she did showed lasting impacts, and it was cognitive, it was memory, it was scores and IQ tests, it was ADHD, and anyway, so all these things. So Dow objects, their primary objection to her study is that it is based on humans, which sounds like a strange thing, except that it is typical that industry does their research on chemicals on lab animals. And lab animals, the thing that researchers love about lab animals is that you can get really very precise doses because you're giving it to them. And also you can replicate them, so you can repeat these experiments. Her experiment could never be replicated because it was sort of based on an accident of fate, really, that
yes.
This ban happened in the middle of when she was enrolling people. And, of course, you would never want to replicate it, right?
Right.
But it is not, the thing is, so their objection partly is that, or mostly, is that it's based on humans and that it's epidemiological, which they say is, you know, you're observing it, you're not actually precisely matching a dose with an outcome.
Hmm.
So, well, you know, and I should say also that, I mean, while obviously they have a financial stake in the outcome of their own studies, which is true for really any industry that's looking at their own products, one of the things I go into in the longer piece is an evaluation of Dow's research on chlorpyrifos done by a team of neuroscientists out of Stanford that was run by the neuroscientist Robert Sapolsky. And he was going to testify in a lawsuit that I also write about in the piece and had been exposed to a little bit of Dow's research on chlorpyrifos and thought it was flawed. He thought it was full of mistakes and mistakes that seemed to point to the safety of chlorpyrifos, he thought, wrongly. So what he did was he got this team of a dozen postdoctoral neuroscientists, and they spent years going over all the chlorpyrifos research that Dow had produced that they could get their hands on. And I linked to his report and the study, my story, and it really is devastating about, you know, his assessment of the science was that it all contained flaws, and most of it contained flaws that violated the basic laws of science. And all the flaws he found pointed were in the direction of showing it to be safer than it was.
Mm. Sharon Lerner is our guest. We're talking about chlorpyrifos and what's happening with whether or not it looked like it might be banned, but with a new administration, a new probable head of the EPA, that may not be happening, and the closeness of the Dow Chemical Company, who makes the majority of chlorpyrifos, and the Trump administration makes it seem likely that there will not be a ban, but who knows? Maybe there will be. We're talking about how it's used, the health effects of chlorpyrifos, why it was banned in home use some years ago, the studies that have emerged since 2000, and welcoming your phone calls for Sharon Lerner, reporter at The Intercept. She focuses on chemicals, health, and the environment. She's also written for The Washington Post, The New York Times, and a number of other publications. This is the Ideas Network. Randy is our next caller. Ripon. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I'm just wondering, as a former hunter and someone who lives in a rural area, if I'm worried about this is a losing battle against the current administration and the EPA, and I just wonder if you've appealed to the most guys I know that are hunters and fishermen are conservative or vice versa, and I'm sure they care about the environment for their sport. And I'm just wondering if you tried appealing or thought about to this segment of the population, because I think if you get these people on board, and it's men and women, and point out, I mean, they're not stupid people. I mean, you know, nobody wants to eat fish that got chemicals in them, and I just wonder if that's a good way to help from the ground up sort of thing, get these people that, you know, I'm sure they, I mean, it appeals to their, you know, their sport.
Mm-hmm.
And in that context, I guess, I'm wondering if that's...
Okay, Sharon, what do you think?
Yeah, well, Randy, I think that's a wonderful idea. And I am not particularly, I'm not at all connected to those communities. So I guess I would ask you, you know, if you want to go to the website and you guys linked to the story, right, share it with people who you think might, the people who might not be reached by, you know, the New York Times, say. And I think you're right. I think that hunters and people in rural areas and, you know, I think that really anyone, once they really understand what's involved and what's at stake, like everyone has kids or knows the kid, you know. Yes, I completely agree. And I think that, I think everyone's help in reaching out on this would be appreciated.
How much money would Dow stand to lose if chlorpyrifos were banned?
You know, I wish I knew the answer to that question. I don't. You know, it's off patent now. So there are now a number of companies that make products containing it.
I see.
And I don't know that information. But, you know, I'm sure it's quite a lot. You know, it's 6 million pounds, not just from them, but from other companies a year. And, of course, and they sell most of the products, and they sell it in 100 countries around the world. And what we do in the United States is often followed by countries around the world. So, you know, if we were to move ahead with this, it would no doubt have an international impact. So I think the financial consequences are great. I just don't know what the exact number is.
Chris in Winona, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to put a quick comment in there from a millennial perspective, millennial conservative perspective. There is hope for the future because, you know, despite it seems like there's sometimes a political divide on these environmental issues, but I've noticed among my generation, if you take climate change out of the equation, there's almost near consensus that we should protect our water and air sources. So I just kind of wanted to put that out there, some anecdotal evidence from me that there is hope that eventually we'll get some more protections for our environment. And that's all.
Thank you. Sharon, you think so?
You know, I think that it's a good idea for me to keep reporting and not prognosticating, you know, because I think the past, I couldn't, you know, a couple months ago, I just couldn't imagine that any of this had happened. So I honestly do not know what will happen.
Hmm. And could you take a guess, and maybe I shouldn't ask this considering what you just said, as to whether or not Scott Pruitt will be confirmed? Do you think he's in trouble?
I really can't answer that, and I just don't know. I think that there is a lot of opposition to him, and I think that anyone, you know, as your last caller was just saying, you know, there are lots of people from lots of, you know, slices of our population and across the aisle, you know, we care about water. We care about air, and I think we all know, anyone who's taken a real look at his record knows that that is not his interest, and that what he, you know, he has not, of course, he's, you know, he doesn't believe in climate change, that is established, but it, beyond that, he has done, he's really, you know, only rolled back protections for water in the air in Oklahoma, and you know, I think that we would expect the same of him, you know, if he does get confirmed. And, you know, so I think there's a lot of opposition, and I think there's a lot of great reason to oppose him.
Thanks, Chris. Claire in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Claire.
I'm very encouraged to hear conservatives calling in and being concerned about the environment, too, because this truly affects everybody. What bothers me, Kathleen, is the Republican leaders I'm talking about now, the leaders, their mantra is always, this includes Governor Walker, by the way, environmental laws, they're job killers. Well,
yeah.
First of all, I'm not so sure there's much evidence for that. And number two, what good is a job if you can't breathe or have no water to drink? You're not going to be long for this earth, job or no job.
Yes. Well said.
Thank you, Claire, very much for your call. John in Rock County. Hi. John, are you there?
No, John.
No, John. Calls back, John. Kenneth in Janesville. Hi.
Hello. I wonder if your guest knows the history of how the state of California has many dangerous products and has warnings for the state of California and how that got to be and has been allowed to continue.
Wait, I'm not sure I understand that question. Would you, so in California, tell me one more time.
Many products that have chemicals in them have the warning stating the state of California has determined that this product is...
Mm-hmm. So they do, you know, all states can regulate chemicals on their own. California, of course, is, you know, the biggest and has a very serious regulatory infrastructure in that state. So they do evaluate the toxicity of chemicals independently, and I think that people in California love that. They also have a system of their own system of dealing with pesticides. So yeah, does that answer your question?
I think it does. Kenneth, thank you very much for the call. So what are you looking for now? Are you looking for the decision that will take place in March, or how is this story moving forward?
The next thing that will happen is that, you know, March is a court-ordered deadline. And, you know, the way it's worded is, you know, the court has ordered several times the EPA to act, but this is a final deadline, and they issued their report on finalizing addressing the scientific questions. So this is really administrative now. It's sort of, you know, putting a bow on it and saying this is done. Dow has raised the possibility, has posed the strategy, it said, well, okay, they have to rule, but they don't have to actually revoke the tolerances, which is, you know, longhand for banning. So what Dow is saying is, okay, they can issue a ruling, and of course they have to issue a ruling, but maybe they could just issue a ruling saying it'll stay on the market. So they're, you know, and they've spent a lot of time trying to think of ways out of this. They hired a lobbyist who's in Washington, you know, going to Congress about ways to have chlorpyrifos not be banned. They've thought about this quite a bit, obviously. So that's what they're pushing for, and that is a possibility. And the other possibility is it could just follow through with its own recommendation, which was very clearly to revoke all tolerances and to ban it.
Mm. Sharon, thank you so much for the enlightening article and also for being with us. Thanks.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sharon Lerner, a reporter at The Intercept. Her piece is on our Facebook page in case you would like to read it. And it is the Kathleen Dunn Show. The piece is from the February 3rd New York Times, and it is titled Protect Our Children's Brains. the author, and our guest this hour, Sharon Lerner. She has also written for The Washington Post and The New York Times, won a number of awards over the years, including a National Headliner Award and awards from the American Public Health Association. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this program. Thanks to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. And thank you for all of your calls and your interest. We are going to have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll talk about refugees in Wisconsin, hour two of the program.